This is the July 21 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Kirk Kimmel from AgMarket.net, along with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities. Kurt is in Normal, Illinois, and Wayne is in New Market, Indiana. We also have some old hands with us today. Paul Cooley is here. He has been on the air at WILL, or was, for almost three decades. And Dan Zwicker is joining us as well. And I believe, Dan, you were on nearly three decades, too. So it should be a good show. Stay with us. Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online at willag.org, W-I-L-L-A-G.org. First, let's get an update on what the two of you have been up to. I think, Paul Cooley, we'll start with you. Since you left WILL, retired from ADMIS, what you been doing?
Well, we moved from Oakwood, Illinois, to Covington, Indiana, for mainly tax reasons. The big factor is I'm still very busy with the farms and estate planning and watching the commodity markets. But the main thing I also wanted to share is we lost a special friend of WILL, Kay Whitlock. She was with Graham Grain at Terre Haute for several years, and with Gavilon and ConAgra, so we're going to miss her.
Dan Zwicker, you are in Texas and wearing a Texas A&M shirt today. Tell me about that.
Well, I'm a big Texas A&M fan. We're only an hour and a half away from the largest stadium in the SEC conference, and it's a blast going down there for football games. So I'm somewhat generally active with A&M as much as I can be. But for the most part, the family keeps me busy. I've been in Texas now 10 years. It's hard to believe it's been 10 years already. I've been in Waco, Texas. It seems like time travels faster as the older I get. But I do stay very much active in the markets. I do watch them every day. Not a day goes by that I'm not watching the stock indexes, or I'm watching the ag commodities or energy commodities. So I do stay generally familiar with the larger fundamentals. I don't try to get into the detailed fundamentals of the individual supply-demand tables, but I do know generally what the fundamental factors are that's driving the commodities and the indexes.
So Thursday of this week, one of the things that apparently was driving the losses in the marketplace was the instability within the energy markets, the crude oil in particular. And since you watch those from time to time, what is your view of that particular market? Went well above the $100 level, hadn't been there for, well, a while, but and has started to drop back some. I'm wondering if you think that this is recession-driven, if it's just supply availability, if it's long-term, short-term. What's your broader view?
Well, crude oil is one thing, and refined gasoline and diesel fuel is another thing, and we're at refiner capacity. Now, I think a lot of what's been in the market for the last 30 days has been speculative money coming out of the market, both in commodities and in stock indexes, on fearful of higher interest rates. Everybody starts talking about the 70s. Several of us has rode that rodeo in the 70s, and some of this has a lot of similarities to it. But I think a lot of what we're seeing in the market, the stock market has dropped to, say, 9,000 or so off its high. That has had a wealth effect in the marketplace. So you're seeing people pull back from that. And when the stock market declined, the next week the commodity market kind of took a nosedive. So I think a lot of this is speculative money coming out of the market because it was cheap interest rates. Now we're seeing higher interest rates, and they're fearful of that inflation or that recession coming in. I'm not sophisticated enough of an economist to say we're in a recession or not, but I do know that gasoline prices and the food prices is taking everybody's disposable income away, especially the people on the lower income bracket. And I have a sneaky feeling that's going to start showing up in sales as we go down the road, whether or not it's next month or 3 months from now. But I do think the consumer is going to turn things off. And gasoline has really, really hurt a lot of people. Now, gasoline's a full dollar cheaper in Texas than it is in Illinois, so we never did get to that $5 plus level. But it is definitely working on the economy.
Kurt and Wayne, I want to continue down this energy path, one short term and one longer term. The short term, Kurt, is related to ethanol usage and gasoline driving miles. It looks like that's coming back. And Wayne, the Biden administration failed to get the climate change functions through that it was looking forward to. That has a direct impact on renewable fuels, including renewable diesel and the green aviation fuel. And I'm wondering what problem that might create. So, Kurt, can you take up first miles driven and whether USDA at some point, whether it be in the August numbers for the supply and demand tables, might start to back even old crop usage off for ethanol?
Well, they've been trying to back off on ethanol demand for a couple years in here, particularly last year, and it's done nothing but stay strong. One is the blend in the gasoline. Two is ethanol exports, too. So, we are competing in around the world, not only with corn ethanol, but with sugar cane ethanol and some other ethanol products. So ethanol's strong. I don't foresee a strong break or a pullback in that usage. One other thing on the gasoline consumption is, yes, the higher prices has slowed some people's thought process here, but two, we're on the downhill side of vacations. Vacations are going to start ending here fairly quickly, and if you're a gasoline person, you've already booked those supplies out of ways, and so we've taken the edge off of our strongest gasoline demand here during the summer. Now, the key is when all these credit card bills come due here after we went on vacation and paid $5 a gallon.
And then longer term, the Biden administration did not manage to get some of the climate change issues through that it would like. Those have now been tabled. I'm wondering if that has become a problem for agriculture as it's related to renewable or biofuels.
Well, yeah, it has in one respect, and it has in another respect. They were going to go way too far on some of these things because some of the EPA regulations would have come along with this was also going to be harmful to farmers and the ag industry as we look at it. They were still going to, along with the other things, he was going to step in with the waters of the U.S. again. He was going to go into excess fertilizer, washing and clean water and everything, and it was maybe going to be regulating cattle herds, the size of cattle herds and everything like that. So there was a lot of negative things in that program, a lot of positive things in that program. And if we can just go back to our ethanol mandate and keep the corn market strong and keep using those extra bushels of corn, I think that the market itself will do us. I really was disappointed when he okayed E15, which there's only so many blender pumps out there, and was only for a two-week time period there, and it never done anything good. But if we'd went to 12% ethanol blend instead of 10% ethanol blend, we could have really helped the American farmer and had 2% more gasoline available to the U.S. public and not have to beg our enemies for processed gasoline.
Paul Cooley, I'm wondering, what is it that intrigues you most about the marketplace today? What things do you think about more often than not?
Well, everything is so expensive. And, of course, we were dreaming, ever since I was a kid, they said inflation is the farmer's best friend. Well, it is in one respect. Farmland jumped $3,000 to $6,000 an acre. But all of our inputs like fertilizer, labor, steel, tractors, all of our inputs have exploded in price. I still maintain that tiling is extremely profitable. Grain storage is too expensive to build. But the two are very magic, and I think you have to have both, as well as a few extra farm acres in your back pocket.
I'm wondering, on the farm, and we talked about this on Thursday, both with Gary Schnitke from the University of Illinois and with Matt Bennett at AgMarket.net, as it relates to the price of anhydrous ammonia, the very, very high price of that product and the 2023 crop. Are there ways that you think producers should consider hedging that risk off? For instance, should they make a sale for 2023 corn if they put anhydrous on or buy really high-priced anhydrous this fall?
Well, my opinion is that I think the farmer is going to be very reluctant until he actually sees what the yield is going to be here and not leapfrog into too much extra buying in the future. I think they're very nervous about the inflation costs. They're also talking about maybe changes in some of the fertilizer coming in. So, Todd, I think they're going to be very conservative as far as booking much inputs ahead.
You know, there was a couple of the ag advisory firms that advised 20% of 23 sales yesterday. They said just do it at the market. They'd had to stop in to try to do 10%. They did 20% yesterday. We saw another advisory firm that puts out a big newsletter every day say this morning that if you're going to book your fertilizer, book some corn too. It looks cheap compared to what we could have sold this year, but he says if you're going to pay up for anhydrous and you can still figure a profit, make sure if you're buying fertilizer now that you book enough corn to cover that. So, I mean, we're seeing it in probably, you know, three advisory firm letters out there. We're hearing Gary Schnitke say it. We're hearing Kurt and Wayne have said it here along the way. I talked to Paul and Dan quite a bit along the way here. We're still friends just because they're not in the office every day. And we also said, you know, you don't want to be booking fertilizer if you don't have something to cover it out there, because we don't know what this world recession is going to do. Is COVID going to come back? Is there something else? But we could be in a very much of a world depression here if things doesn't straighten out and we spend all our money in the Ukraine.
I want to come back. Oh, go ahead.
Yeah, one thing we've dipped our toe into to kind of hedge this 23 crop but leave our options open is everybody's wanting to know what this February price guarantee is going to be in February for crop insurance. Those March short dated options are based off new crop, and what that does is those expire in February about when the price discovery comes out. You can come in, and this is high risk options and futures are volatile, but you buy at the money put, then sell out of the money call to help pay for that. So the theory is you kind of locked in a floor in through here, and the only way that's really wrong or gets you in your pocket if we go higher, say up to $7 or so forth. So that's one strategy if you're a little flexible, can stand a little bit of risk to kind of work on that 23 without getting too deep in it.
So the reason the risk is there is not because of the one option, but the one that you're writing, correct? Because that's can be a hedge position.
It has to be a hedge. It has to be unsold bushels and go lightly in it, because as the market goes up, there will be margin calls, but you're guaranteeing your higher price later on in February, and it has to go on above that higher call at the end to be really wrong.
Well, I want to stay with the risk. I was going to ask you about the gambling stocks that producers have left, both corn and soybeans, and how long they ought to risk at this point going into the fall.
Well, as far as old crop, it is a gamble from here on out. From standpoint is you're betting on some adverse weather conditions to pop up real quickly or something in the world to happen here. I think you got to use up in here to clean stuff out, because in past history, as we move into August, if we get through the August crop report and there's nothing big in through here, the end user is going to take some downtime and wait for a new crop to come in place.
What do we know about the crop across the whole of the United States now? I know the western part of the U.S. Is really complaining very loudly the further west you go that they're just in a serious drought, just as bad as it can be.
Well, if you listen to all the farmer stories, everybody's hurting. We're all short of moisture, and it looks like a terrible crop. Now, I will tell you, there was one broadcaster was at my house over the 4th of July time period, and he says, that corn looks really like a bad drought, and it was the best-looking corn crop next to my house I've ever seen, and him also. But Paul and I were talking about it today. There's fields we can see a little bit of yellow. We can see a little bit of breaking like that. We're not in the area that had it, but, you know, well, I can talk to some friends south of here, and their corn pollinator was 105 degrees out. That's not going to be very good. We've got areas of Oklahoma where they say it's burn up. There's nothing there. We've got guys in Kentucky that we talked to, and the insurance agent's saying, plow your, disc your corn up, seed some cheap beans, and see if they, if we get a rain for them to come up that way, because you aren't going to have a corn crop, and we're going to fail it, give you 100% on that, and you're after the late planting date, stick the beans in. So depending on where you're at, it's really pretty good or pretty bad. You know, in the areas that have got the decent rains, I think we've got a good crop. But I'm also going to tell you that a lot of the people that I talk to, and when we try to add it up and we write down the numbers, I think we're probably down about 3 bushels on this corn crop already. And I'm going to take a bushel or two off the beans as far as me for looking at things. So that's what we're looking at. We're looking at because we're trying to take the big picture. I think we're very fortunate in my area. The guys say, well, we're going to run out of moisture this weekend. Yeah, but we're scheduled for a rain, maybe not a big one, but we're scheduled for a rain on Sunday or Monday here. And, you know, it's the sesquicentennial in downtown Newmarket this weekend, so I figure there's a good chance of rain.
Paul Cooley, you're shaking your head on the 3-bushel decline in the 177 for corn. Why is that the case?
Well, I definitely think Wayne is headed in the right direction. We're going to see, I think, at least a 1 bushel to 2 bushels smaller crop and a smaller bean crop. Unfortunately, I'm surprised that the market hasn't leapfrogged and grabbed those numbers and traded on that data at this point. I think they're very, they're looking at this big rain forecast that's supposed to come into the weekend and next week, and just see how big that is. The one other point that I want to make here is I feel the government overestimated on-farm corn stocks. And the reason is that there's, the basis levels is too strong in too many areas, and the farmer just didn't hold on to that kind of volume, in my opinion, out in the country.
What convinces you of that's the case?
Well, several years ago when we saw these tremendously strong price premiums, when we start talking about a dollar over, 65 cents over, I think that it tells me that. Now, I do know that some grain companies got into trouble when the basis levels and they didn't roll their hedges. In other words, they weren't able to market a dollar and a half over the July futures. It might be grain companies that have rolled hedges that are doing it, but the American farmer, I think, moved the grain and moved it quick.
Dan, I want you to talk a little bit about the charts. I don't know whether you've looked at them very much. I've got, and if you have, that's fine. Tell me about some of those. But what are the things that farmers should be aware of in the charts? What should they watch? They can all get to them easily enough now online at places like barchart.com and others, and they can put some of these things in. What are the things that you think they should be watching, and what do you see in them at the moment?
Well, to try to make things simple, is we're following a very typical seasonal pattern. The market rallied in the April, May, into June. I think the highs are probably going to be technically recorded in May, but prices held together for that first couple weeks of June, and about mid-June, the bottom started falling out, and it just kept getting worse and worse. And July, 9 out of 10 years, you close lower during the month of July. So we only got another week or so left of July, so it doesn't look like we're going to be able to come back for a higher close unless something really changes in a quick order. I think what farmers need to seasonally is that a lot of times we'll kind of drift into the August crop report, and then depending upon what the August crop report says, whether or not we get a recovery. Many times we kind of get a little minor recovery going into first part of September, and September is another one of those months that is dominantly down. You know, 8 out of 10 years, you're going to close lower during September, and then the market has a tendency to find an October low during the first half of October, especially beans. Corn many times will find an October low, but then I'll come back and retest it during December. So I think what farmers need to watch to see if this seasonal pattern gives you any indication whether it's changing. And I'm thinking it was 2010. I'm not too sure. But in 2010, all of a sudden, the month of September closed higher. And that's counter-seasonal. And that is something that we need to watch, especially because we're not going to – we can argue about what size of crop we got until the cows come home right now. This is the time of year that we can argue whether or not we got a half a crop, 90% of a crop, or 110% of a crop, but we're not going to get any good USDA statistics really until you get into October. That's when they do acreage changes. That's where they really get a good handle of the yield. I'm curious to see what the August number is going to be, but population counts ought to be very, very high, because we didn't have any ponding or flooding this spring, especially that's the way it is back in northwestern Illinois where I'm from. They all got a 39,000, 40,000 count population. So, but I would watch the month of September to see whether or not that goes counter-seasonal or not. And if it goes counter-seasonal, then we're maybe good. We're going to put in an early fall low, and then we're going to climb higher into next spring.
A couple of things that I learned from you and that I watch all the time. I like the RSI, the Relative Strength Index. It's always on all the charts at the bottom, overbought and oversold conditions. I know, Kurt, that you use that fairly often. Trend lines, and the trend is your friend, Paul Cooley. You taught me that years and years and years of telling us the trend line was there. And moving averages, which I don't use as often, but lots of people do. And then there are all kinds of other formations. I happen to like Fibonacci numbers. I like the geometry of that. Kurt, what are the charts showing you?
Well, basically, we'll start with Paul here. The trend's down if you draw a trend line. So basically, we're down momentum. And if you follow Dan's stochastics and relative strength indexes and so forth, we had a sell signal here, but we're just down here at the bottom. We're kind of flatlined here. We're incredibly oversold, but good bear markets can stay oversold like good bull markets can stay overbought in through here. Now, the thing that a lot of people watch, but the big money, the funds are watching these moving averages. The big popular one, we're bouncing back and forth. The 200-day, we went below it, couldn't get quite back above it. And so the 200-day moving average is what kind of these bigger funds are following, so you need to keep an eye on that.
The trend is your friend. It's not the direction you think the markets are going to go, though, at the moment.
Well, true. There's two caps you should wear, and really the real rule is follow the trend and stop guessing what the real crop is. But the one dilemma that I was having a conversation with Wayne coming over to Champaign today was, why isn't our congressman and the USDA challenging China to buy what they're supposed to buy? In other words, they're not in the marketplace. The administration needs to hold the Chinese feet to the fire. They are obligated to buy corn and soybeans, and they're not doing it. And we need to really find out why.
Wayne Nelson, what should farmers think about on new crop and additional sales if needed, or storage for the fall?
I think that most farmers are in the shock mode right now. I think that the deer in the headlights would best describe them. They are convinced that the drought that we keep talking about that they're having out west is going to be something to save them here later. Right now, I think that we're seeing very few cash sales for new crop for this fall's corn or fall 23 of most of the farmers in Indiana now. They've got a fairly decent crop sitting out there, but they're all worried that they need one more rain to get them through kernel set. So I think the deer in the headlights is the best on what the farmers are thinking right now. I think that as you said, the Chart people sold 2 weeks ago. They're happy now. They sold a lot cheaper than what maybe there was a lot of recommendations made by a lot of people at this table earlier to get to 40 or 50%. But I mean, I think that they are just sort of hanging back a lot now. You know, like I say, I generally, when I see a lot of people talking about, you know, making some sales in that time period, make a few phone calls, and I got absolutely nobody that said put an order in for me.
Let's talk a little bit about cash basis, agmarket.net. JSA has deep pockets, deep intelligence in that area. What have you been learning?
Well, the strong basis, and Paul pretty well touched on that there, we kind of believe there's not a whole lot of old crop around here. We saw this 2-3 years ago, same thing. As soon as the old crop went off, we went into the new crop marketing year, all of a sudden the numbers started showing, hey, there's not that much green around. So we'll see how that unfolds, but you can't trade a position on that. But one thing we've been kind of picking up from the commercial end user side of it, there's quite a bit of interest at 550 basis the December futures. The end user's not really covered right now, but they know they got to start getting some coverage on. So I think down in that 550 area, you're going to start to see some interest pop up.
Paul Cooley, I want to come back to you and ask about the psychology of the market. This is something you were a student of for your entire career. I'm wondering what you think about the psychology of the market today and whether black box computer trading, the amount of money that is in the commodity markets, particularly in the CME group, has changed the way you have to consider the psychology of the market. Is there just so much money, for instance, that the charts overwhelm the psychology?
Well, let's just go to the hedge funds and how they play, like a Ken Griffin and all those kind of people. But like, my opinion is that they have borrowed a lot of money and bought stocks and has that multiplier effect type of psychology. And I think that the trouble is with these higher interest rates and a feeling that we're going into a recession, it has changed the dynamics from the world buyer perspective as well as the commodity trader in the United States. And I think it's liquidation, and they're very afraid to take any economic position in the marketplace.
Does that mean that the fundamentals are overwhelmed by the psychology of this marketplace?
Yeah, that's a good point, and I think so, Todd. I think that the fundamentals are a little stronger than what the price action. Would all the group agree with me on that?
Everybody has shaken their heads to the affirmative on that one.
Yeah, I think that's true. Going a step further, we really don't know what our input costs are going to be. We don't know what our fertilizer, gasoline prices. We're overwhelmed with just a lot of waiting to see what happens, Todd. You know, wait and see.
On the wait and see note, let's get to our final thoughts for the day. I think Wayne Nelson from L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana. We'll start with you.
Well, just a lot of fun today, Todd. This is like the old days. Is it 1990 again? Here we are. You know, I'm sort of the short kid on the end that learns a lot from everybody else here. And these were my mentors and the guys that taught me an awful lot. So I'm just thrilled to be here with a bunch of old friends. But as far as we're looking at the markets here, it's a very tumultuous time here right now. These markets are either going to stop where they stopped the last time and turn back around, or they can keep on falling. And it's either the time to buy or to sell because it's going to get a lot worse. And, you know, we're going to have to keep an eye on all the psychology that you talked about and everything else going on here and see. But next week, it's going to be a turning point one way or the other.
Kurt Kimmel from agmarket.net, your final word?
Yeah, I just got to echo Wayne. It's a great honor to be on the panel again with two icons. I was able to work for Dan for 8-9 years, learned a ton from him, and spent many winters doing marketing meetings with Paul Cooley. I mean, we covered the whole state of Illinois, north and south, and portions of Indiana. And glad you guys can make it today. It's quite humbling to be able to visit again on that. Market-wise, I think you guys stay flexible and have some type of strategy here. Don't panic and make hard, rash decisions all at once. That's the last thing you want to do is get caught with the deer in the headlights, like Wayne said there.
Dan Zwicker, a final word from you. Thank you for coming up, by the way, from Texas.
Well, this is my annual trip. I do own farm ground in Illinois, and we do come up once a year now and talk to the we got a couple farm families farming our ground, and it's fun visiting with them. And I could tell right away their biggest concern is they can't get a bid on input costs for next year. You can call up anybody about what fertilizer is going to cost or what this is going to cost, and nobody will give them a bid. And I think they're technically concerned, too. They may have fuel contracted. They may have this contracted. But contracts can fall like dominoes if the supply chain breaks down. So there is a lot of worry out there in the country, and I think that worry and uncertainty is going to stay with us for a while. It has been fun doing Commodity Week here, my once a year, I guess, appearance on Commodity Week. I do listen to you guys. I do know what's going on up in the Midwest. So, but yeah, generally speaking, I think we're just readjusting everything, and being an older senior citizen, I'm having a more difficult time adjusting to these new prices. And I think that's where we're at right now. Everybody's trying to determine what the value of stuff is, and nobody really knows for sure. We know we're in a new era of some kind. We just don't know what kind of era we're in. But, you know, when the pickup trucks cost $100,000 for a fully loaded, you know, something has changed big. I understand these big John Deere tractors are all $500,000 now. So prices have definitely got everybody puzzled of what things are actually worth, and that's where we're at, I think, is redefining what the value of corn and soybeans are worth per bushel. And I, from experience, when the market starts up, it always goes higher than what you think, and once it starts down, it always goes lower than what you think. So I guess brace for about anything and just, you know, play it cool.
Paul Cooley, on that note, I do want a crystal ball from you before I get a final word from you. 30 years ago, we restructured everything in price. We have restructured at a new plateau, higher prices for commodities. Is the rest of the economy just catching up at this point?
Good question. I do think we're going to see labor costs go up dramatically from here. I think the ag community is a very mature economy, and I think the other part here that we really need to give the farmer some perspective is that we're going to know very quickly this weekend and the next 5 days about the weather forecast, and I think the marketplace is trying to tell us that it's a perfect crop with 2 inches of rain.
And what's your final word for the day?
Hey, it's been wonderful seeing all you guys, and I was just going to laugh. Remember when you went on the Pro Farmer Grain Tour the first time and the feedback we got from that?
I do. That was a fantastic trip. It was the Illinois Farm Bureau trip at that time, and just being able to get out in the field and take yields was very eye-opening at the time. Could you do one more thing for me?
Sure.
What's your typical sign-off?
Have a profitable day.
Paul Cooley has joined us here on Commodity Week, along with Wayne Nelson, Dan Zwicker, and Kurt Kimmel. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.